We haven't entirely nailed down what element it is yet, but I'll tell you this, it's a lively one.
Let's give your parents a call right now.
Hello, welcome to episode number 110 of Gaming with the Moms. My name is Nicole Tanner. I've been around the video game industry for a long time, writing and also doing marketing and public relations. I'm also the mom of a five-year-old who's getting ready to start school next week. Anyhow, we can talk about that in a minute. I'm also joined by fellow mom Regina McMenemy, who is from the Geek Embassy, is a fellow Game of Thrones nerd. I think that's going to be your title from now on, Regina.
That works for me.
Apologize in advance. But she's
We should all have our long titles, just like Daenerys, right?
Oh, right.
So I'm mother of toddler, mother of five-year-old, mother of three kids.
Maybe
that
should be our homework assignment, is for us to come up with our multiple titles. but Regina is also the mom of a three-year-old. I don't know if I said that or not. So we had our one-on-one meeting with Anna's kindergarten teacher today, which was really cool. I love the fact that the school district is doing this, the kindergartners. Start a week later than everybody else so that we all have one-on-one meetings with her teacher. She was like a little angel while we were there. Very quietly went and picked up a book to read and got a puzzle out. And I was just like, really? And like I tried to tell him, I'm like, well, some of the biggest issue we have with her at home is that, number one, she doesn't listen. And now it seems like it's just us, which is fabulous. And number two, she likes to like interrupt people because she has so much she wants to say. So like I'll be reading a book and she'll like stop me mid-sentence and say something else, and I'm like, no, you gotta wait until I can at least finish a sentence and then you can tell me what you need to tell me. So but she was so good today, who knows, she'll probably be perfect there, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's,
I mean, it is fantastic,
pretty much been my
but at the
experience.
Same time, yeah.
Yeah,
and I mean I haven't seen her much when she's been at daycare or kindercare, but she's still like apparently her sort of wild self there. And maybe it's just like a comfort thing, like, or maybe she hasn't figured out everything that she can do. She kept asking to do things at the art station. And we're like, well, you know, we don't have very much time. It was a half hour meeting, but we got to walk around the school afterwards, learn sort of what her routine was going to be. So we were able to walk through the beginning of the day with her before she gets to her teacher.
Nice.
Because she's going to be having,
oh, that's awesome.
Because she's going to be having breakfast at school. It's a little different from her than everybody else. So I can say my tearful goodbye without everybody else seeing it. But it's good. We were able to like, okay, here's what's going to happen. You're going to go into the school. You're going to go through this hallway here. You can see the cafeterias over there. Mommy's going to say goodbye. You're going to go into the cafeteria. You're going to eat. When you're done, you're going to come back out this way and back out the building and, you know, by this tree. And the really thing that's cool because her teacher comes and meets the whole class and then takes them back right in front of the school, at least for the first few days. And then after that, he'll be a little farther away and then a little farther away and then still farther away, eventually until they know how to get to their classroom on their own. So,
cool.
Yeah, it seems awesome.
I like that. Yeah.
Very, very cool. Regina, you said your daughter's in full-time preschool now?
Yeah, full day preschool now. So she did the summer program this year. She did a half day, so it was 8:30 to 12:30. Part of that was because she's still in the tail end of potty training, and I wasn't sure she was going to use the potty there.
Right. Yeah.
And she didn't actually for like 4 of the 6 weeks that she went, and then just one day she's like, "Oh, I can do this," and I'm like,
"Yeah."
Of course you can. Yeah. And just a switch flipped.
Yeah.
And even her teacher was like, I had shown her like the first couple weeks she would show her every day, like where the bathroom was and the procedures and all that. And she wouldn't go. So I didn't want to leave her that long. But I have a very demanding teaching schedule this fall. I'm teaching 7 classes. And I usually teach 4.
Yeah.
So that gave me an idea of exactly how much more work I have. And I was trying to think about like maybe coordinating something with her former in-house sitter, but then I was like, then I'm adding that coordination on top of it, whereas I could just have her at school until 3:30 and would be less disruptive for everybody that way.
Yeah,
not to mention significantly cheaper. And so we just decided to end up having her for all day, and yesterday was her first all day day, and she just yelled out my name as soon as I walked in the door. She's like, "Mommy!" And yeah. She threw her arms up in the air and came running.
That's the best. Sweet. But I've also had times with Anna where I come in and she's like, "I don't want to go." And I'm like,
you know, that's what Iris was like at 12:30. So oh. I figured that, you know, extending it to 3:30, I didn't think was going to be hard for her because I knew she liked it enough that she didn't want to leave.
And Anna was like that, like, you know, it was day to day, whether she was going to be upset or happy. But the worst thing that happened is I came to pick her up and she like threw a tantrum. She said, "I want daddy to pick me up." I was like, "Are you kidding me? Like, seriously?" In front of everybody crying, screaming, "I wanted daddy to pick me up." I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
And Isaac thought that was vaguely amusing. And I'm like, no. How would you feel if the roles were reversed? Like, seriously.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. It's hard. Well, Iris keeps asking because she watched a couple of episodes of Sid the Science Kid and his grandma picks him up at school. And she has said to me on numerous occasions, you know, "I wish grandma could pick me up." And I've managed only to cry the first time. The first time I cried. And then after that, I was like, well, I understand this is coming from me. But it's fun. I'm glad. See, in a fall semester, we'll see how it all goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, she's just going to be even more prepared for when she starts kindergarten. You know, which kindergarten is actually, I have so much respect for these teachers because they're going to have kids come in at such a wide range of skills and abilities because some kids just don't go to preschool at all or haven't had their parents help them learn anything, and they're not even going to know any of their letters or numbers or anything when they walk in the door as opposed to like...
Well, or and even like, you know, the social construction of a classroom, they won't understand, and the lining up and the like how you behave and all that stuff, they don't know that either. So it's
So he said, like, you know, as he starts to gauge people's abilities, when the kids are sort of doing free time or other type of stuff, he tries to group them together with kids of the similar sort of skill level and emotional development and stuff. So yeah, there's 23 kids in her class. So, I was impressed, though, because when we went to the open house last week and introduced ourselves, and he's like, "Hey, Anastasia," and I'm like, "Yeah. We call her Anna, you know, kind of thing." And that he remembered. Today we walked in. He was like, "Hey, Anna." I'm like, "All right, bonus points already."
So, details. Yeah. Details is so important.
Yeah. So. And we're also joined by Stephen Dutzman, who is editor and founder of EngageFamilyGaming.com and the father of three, and who just decided to join us because he thought we were recording Game of Thrones podcast. So, you know, that's how that goes.
Because we're always recording a Game of Thrones podcast. That's what we do.
We're always willing to record Game of Thrones podcast.
Yeah. You know, that was just a joke that we added you onto that invitation. You know, it was just...
Yeah.
Thought you would understand that...
I don't understand humor. I take you guys literally. So now that I understand, so we're supposed to talk about video games.
Yes, yes.
Right.
Talk about video games. Destiny 2. Destiny 2 is out now. I'm not playing it, but Steven is. Steven got sent a crazy gift from Activision. Let's talk about this crazy gift. What was in it?
I have looked at it. I have not opened because I will be... actually, by the time this is recorded, you can go to the EngageFamilyGaming.com Facebook page, and I will be unboxing it later. But what is in it is a copy of the game, a really awesome, like, messenger bag that is pretty sick. And how about this? It comes with a solar-powered USB... Wait, hold on. Let me get it. There's a description. It has this weird thing attached to it that's like a part of it that is a solar powered. Let's see here. The bag is a Frontier bag.
Okay.
And you can customize it to either be a backpack or a messenger bag, which is cool. Mm. But one of the things that it comes with is a survival themed item, which can be strapped to the bag. It is a you break it apart. It has a solar-powered USB charger, a solar blanket, and a paracord all attached in this one silver object that all put together is like this weird silver thing. But a solar-powered USB charger is actually kind of rad. I don't know. And then other than that, it comes with like a bunch of like random Destiny like doohickeys. The box is so big that my wife actually called me at work and accused me of buying a PlayStation 4. Because she thought that that's what I did. She thought that I bought a PlayStation 4 because the box is freaking massive. If they put a PS4 in here, it really wouldn't have had much wasted space. They could have done it. They sent me the collector's edition, which is awfully kind of them. Obviously, this is my review copy. They got that Activision money. So this was absolutely sent gratis in an effort to have me review it and create content around it. And I am very likely to do so. So I will be unboxing it and there will be pictures all over our Instagram and I'll likely be wearing like this. This has to be my new convention bag, right?
I would hope.
Like I can't not like I have to bring this to HasCon and be like, check out my swag. Right. Like this is I mean, I think as the kids call this, this is swagalicious. You know, that kind of thing. Right?
Sure.
All right.
Listen, at least I didn't dab, but I have not actually played the full version of the game. I did play in the beta. Yeah. In fact, if you go to the EngageFamilyGaming.com YouTube channel, you can watch a video of me playing the game very poorly, which I think is relevant to some of the things we're going to talk about later. But it's great, I think. I have a box quote that I think actually like really encapsulates how a lot of people are feeling about this game. And the way that it reads is it says, if Destiny, this is from, Uncle Badger, who is a member of the Engage Family Gaming staff. It says, if Destiny 1 is an unfurnished home, a nice place with a lot of potential, but not a whole lot there, Destiny 2 is that same place all moved in. And I think this is just an Assassin's Creed 2 moment. You know, they had the potential. There was a lot going for it. I mean, Bungie knows how to make sci-fi shooters. Hey, right? Hashtag Halo. So we knew that that was not going to be a problem. It was everything else. And everything that I have read today and everyone that I have spoken to who has played it has been very happy. And it looks like, while they had some server issues off the bat, at midnight, they resolved them quickly, which considering, you know, like Regina and I both played World of Warcraft, we were there for multiple expansions where it took days before things stabilized. I'll give them a couple hours at the exact midnight worldwide launch. I'll give them a break now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you can expect that to happen. Anybody who expects a game, an online game like that to function perfectly right out of the gate is... I don't know what to say to you. You're living in an alternate reality because that's just the way things are. You can test and test and test and test, but once the thing really goes live for the first time, you really can't anticipate what's going
to
happen.
Well, there's no way to predict.
Yeah.
There's no way to predict 100%. Yeah. The one I remember even worse than WoW was Diablo 3. That was horrible when it launched. It was just like, okay, maybe tomorrow.
I mean,
and, maybe tomorrow.
I think the one issue we might be getting with some of the people complaining a little bit extra is that Destiny is grabbing an audience that maybe isn't necessarily used to this stuff. You know, I mean, when I talk about World of Warcraft and, you know, Regina mentions Diablo, like there's a lot of overlap in that Venn diagram. But like, I would bet that a healthy percentage of the people who play Destiny are people who came over because they loved Halo and didn't necessarily play online games on PC. So this the server stability thing is probably it could be new to some of them. So I am so I'll give some of them a pass. They weren't there in the trenches like the rest of us. But I mean, again, it's one night. And it seems to have already stabilized. I'll be playing it later on tonight, so I will. I'll be able to comment on it.
Cool. Okay. Other news. This is super funny news. I couldn't believe it when I came across this headline on Polygon. So, Animal Farm. If you're well-read at all, you will know that Animal Farm is a novel by George Orwell. A very nice...
Who's that? Just kidding.
A very nice metaphorical novel and being very entertaining at the same time. But anyhow, Animal Farm is going to be a game, which is kind of weird. But the other thing that's weird is that it's going to have two very distinct game modes. So you're going to have your typical sort of third-person adventure-y type mode, really related to story. It sounds like it's going to have very, well, hopefully it would have a lot of story in it. But then the other mode is going to be like a sandboxy, like Roller Coaster Tycoon type thing where you can just build your farm and manage your animals.
And manage your talking animals.
Yeah, your talking animals.
We are probably going to tell you if, you know, you need to up your game.
Right. Yeah.
Wow, them pen's kind of dirty over here. Can you get on it, please?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm a little hungry. You got anything more to eat up there? Because that's the whole, of course, premise of Animal Farm is that the animals talk. So
yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think there's a little bit more to the premise than just talking animals.
Well, yeah.
A little bit more to it.
It's a satire.
Might be a little on the nose.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting time for this to be developed as a game.
Yes. It definitely is. Mm-hmm. So look forward to seeing that. I don't think they haven't announced a release date yet, but they've got some pretty people who have worked on some really good story driven games are working on this. It's the people who worked on The Witcher 3 and Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, which I still haven't got a chance to play that. There are so many games I want to play.
I know.
Just not getting a chance.
Way.
So
time.
Yeah, so it looks like that they've got some really good story-driven game experienced developers on that. So that's encouraging. Still kind of weird, but it's encouraging. And then other news, which isn't news at all, that the internet is stupid. We know that the internet is stupid. But lately, they have sort of gaming, our wonderful toxic gaming community has decided to attack a very experienced game journalist simply because he didn't do well playing a demo of a game at Gamescom on the show floor. So, Dean Takahashi is our journalist. He has been around for a very, very long time. I met him first when I was doing PR and marketing, which would have been back in, right when I started that job. So it would have been 2004 is when I met him. And at that point, he was the tech editor for the San Jose Mercury News, which sort of included games. So like back then, when newspapers were still a thing, games were sort of contained under the big tech umbrella. So he covered everything. And now he works for VentureBeat he's been at VentureBeat since the beginning. He was one of the founding people, I'm pretty sure. So he went to Gamescom. He played the demo of Cuphead, who we've all seen. If you haven't, then I don't know what rock you've been living under. Cuphead is the game that has a really cool animation style, so it looks like an old cartoon. So he played that. He made a demo of it. Video of it got posted on their YouTube channel because they were, you know, capturing video, obviously. So everybody in the world could see that he was having problems playing the game, and so therefore all of our lovely gaming community people say, he couldn't play the game. How does he have a right to write about games? And then in general, game journalists are bad at games. Why should they be allowed to write about games? And, you know, it's one of those things that just make you go, oh, God.
Yeah, it's a cycle of, you know, bad.
Yeah.
And nobody should have to be good at every game or have any kind of pressure to perform, you know, analysis and play are definitely different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different skill sets and should be acknowledged as such.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Case in point, like John Clayton, the professor, is a former ESPN personality. If you ever saw a picture of him, you would likely be like, wow, there is literally no way he has ever played football in his life. He is a very small man. He's very slight. He's potentially very frail, but he knows football better than I think probably anybody out there, at least from a editorial standpoint, right? Like that dude knows what he's talking about. Field Yates is one of the best reporters I've ever seen. He was a beat reporter for the New England Patriots for a very long time, despite being incredibly young. And he is probably not I mean, he's definitely not a professional football player. Otherwise, he would do that and make all those dollars. So the idea that you need to be good at something in order to report on it is insane. It's patently absurd. I mean, the only thing that I agree with, at least slightly, and the thing that these people weren't getting at is, I mean, if he this was a demo, this was not a review.
Yeah.
If he should review that game, because because he would hate his life. Because if he can't play through the demo, then he's not going to be able to finish the game. And you need to be able to complete games, in order to be able to review them. So that is a case in point. But man, did I see a lot of Twitch streamers with 50 followers on with 50 followers and no Facebook page, talking about how video game journalists are hot garbage. And it just sounds like sour grapes. It's like the reality is there's only so much oxygen in the room. It gets eaten up by a lot of bigger outlets. And that sucks for you when you only have 50 followers. Deal with it. I'll just put, I mean, I got nothing. The reality is you're either going to grow or there's a reason you're not. So,
And this also too, like, it's just, there's so little space for people. I mean, that's basically what you were saying, but I mean, even to work, like if you have experience, even to get one of those staff positions is extremely hard. So I have a friend that I used to work with when I was doing PR and marketing, lives up here because one of the studios was here. So he just wrote a book about like breaking into the game industry where he like broke it down by discipline. So here's what artists do. Here's what designers should do, you know, all that kind of stuff. And he asked me to do an interview with him where he was asking how you would break into games journalism. And I'm like, I tried not to laugh in his face, but I did the interview and it was like doomsday. It was just like, it's not going to happen. Like for the majority, some people really could, but they will have to have been freelancing very, very well for a long time before they will get a staff position, because there's just so many staff positions to go around and the whole thing is contracted. So like IGN, for example, bought 1UP and GameSpy. And so all of those sites kind of get, you know, crushed into IGN, which unfortunately meant that staffs for those sites got crushed out of IGN. So you have even less space for people to do this professionally. So it sucks. It really does suck. A lot of these people really, really, really want to be games journalists, and they don't understand what is involved in being a games journalist. Like, you don't walk in and play games all day, you know. We do play games more than a developer plays games, but at the same time, you have to do your writing and editing. You have to play games that you don't like, which is really
that
terrible.
Is fundamentally misunderstood, let me tell you. There are plenty of
I said that
it's awful.
I said
but
during research when I was working on my dissertation, I said the same thing. It's so much so cool that I could turn something that was an interest of mine into my topic, but it was also a drag at the same time, because then, you know, gaming became my work, and it's different when it's your work. It's a very different thing when it's not what you're using to kind of enjoy and check out or have fun. It becomes different. It changes it, and it fundamentally changes it to the point where I can't play now without thinking in, you know, academic terms about what I'm playing. There's just no way to do that. So
my biggest horror experience, which actually came up again, so it's Twitter or something with people that I used to work with, was a game called Babysitting Mama. So it was all in the cooking Mama, you know, they did Mama every
the one games. With the doll.
The one with the doll, yes. The one it with was the doll. So insane. So it was for Wii. You would stick a Wiimote inside the doll, which, and then you had to do things like rocket and all that sort of stuff, but there was the sensory stuff on that was so bad that in order to make it look like you were doing anything with the doll, you had to like shake it like really hard. And I'm like, this is supposed to be a baby. And I'm like, anyhow,
With that said, I think that they could remake that now with Joy-Cons and it would be much better. But they won't. It's just the whole thing. I mean, I get it. kinda, but it's absurd. Kinda. It's very absurd. Yeah. To say that I am patently, just objectively, let's just say it, I'm bad at video games. It's clear. We have a whole hashtag about it. But to say that Steve is bad at video games. But to say that I can't objectively identify what games are good or bad to hold that stance means that you don't understand how critical thought works. Period. Right. The end. So considering the original source of that post, I am not in the least bit surprised.
Yeah.
I'm not going to throw them under the bus particularly, but it's not hard to figure out who the original source for that was. And they are, how shall we say, absurd.
Right. Yeah. And Dean is so awesome because in that story, he was just poking fun at himself. He's like extremely sarcastic. Like if you met him, you would never get sarcasm from him right off the bat. So it's funny because I posted on Facebook how terrible this thing was, and I tagged him. And so, you know, he responded, you know, thanks for saying this. And he's like, the internet is a lovely place. So,
Yeah.
So he's been around reporting on games for a long time, so he knows. He gets it. But talking about sort of, well, what was great. So PAX West was this past weekend. I did not have to do any work, which means I didn't have to run around playing any games that I didn't want to play, which was fabulous because that's the first time that that has happened to me. But I made a list of the games that I played and that I thought were worth talking about. So we went to PAX with my daughter. We have done since she was 18 months. This was her fourth PAX. So the first game that really caught her attention was this game called Piku Niku. It was in the Indie Mega booth. It was hard to miss because it had this bright pink light and these big fuzzy chairs for you to sit in to play it. But nice. Steven, this is the game that you were like, what the hell? When I posted the picture on Facebook. So it looks very, very kind of simple and stupid. Like, we're talking primary colors with just shapes. It's a cooperative puzzle game, sort of platformer puzzle game, where you basically play as ovals, but these ovals have really long, springy legs and feet. And that comes into the gameplay. So, like, you actually have to at times kick your partner up onto a ledge in order to hit a button or move a ball or whatever. And the expressions on it's very simple. Like, typically, there are two black dots and a mouth on these ovals. But when one of them gets kicked, their eyes become like real eyes. And it's like really big, like white eyes with the black pupils in the center. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. Anna absolutely loved watching the kicking of these things. She wanted to go back and play it like a bazillion times. And we tried to help her play it. She just wasn't quite, you know, she's not quite there game-wise about being able to like figure out what you're supposed to do, and even to actually get the character exactly where she wants it to go. She still has a little bit of trouble with that, but she loved that game. I thought it was cool. I'm moving down the list, but I'll save the really good one for last. But Steven, I want you to be prepared for this. Are you prepared? And I know you're sitting down, but you need to be prepared.
I am sitting down. I'm prepared.
I played a Switch game that I thought was
okay. That doesn't surprise me that you played a Switch game.
Oh, really? I thought it would.
I mean,
so
okay.
I mean, I wasn't doing a job, so you know, honestly.
I mean, I know you hate Nintendo, but I mean, so what game did you play?
It's called Yoku's Island Express, and it's this cute little thing. You play a little beetle who is attached to a ball.
Yeah.
For some reason, I couldn't gather. And as you move through the world, it's all pinball machine mechanics. So you're using levers and all that kind of stuff to kind of get him through the world. So it's like a 2D, almost like adventure-y type thing, but you're using pinball stuff, which I thought was pretty cool. Got frustrating pretty quickly for me because I'm really bad at pinball. Isaac was just zipping his way through it, no problem. But he's been playing pinball games all his life, and he's really good at them. So that was pretty cool. It was cute. That was the only Switch game that I played. Next on my list, there's a game called Gardens Between, which was also in the Indie Mega booth. It has sort of a Monument Valley-esque aesthetic to it, but it is different in that there are two characters, but you don't control the characters directly. You control what happens to the characters as they move through time. So, if you're, you know, your character is walking up something and they see like a bunch of wood just sort of like scattered on the path that can't get over it, you can manipulate time to move that big pile of wood back to where it was originally, which opens up the path for you to be able to go through. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's really, really, really neat. They had one of the levels that I actually had to stop because Anna was being impatient and wanted to go somewhere else. One thing that I will say to the dev, they made a huge mistake. Their demo was way too long. So the first day that I went to sort of play it, I couldn't even, you know, the line was too long. It was taking too long. I made a point to go the second day as early as possible so I could get into play it. But this one level that I had to stop was really, really cool because it's sort of, it's got like modern type things like stuck in the mountains. So like there's a TV and there's a game controller and there's a VCR and a remote control and all this kind of stuff. And so one of the things that you have to do in the general goal in these things is you have to collect these orbs in order to beat the level. So one of the things that you had to do was if you hit a certain thing, there would be a little like 2D little TV-esque character that would pop out. I think he came out of the VCR. And you would have to use him to jump into the game on the TV, which 2D platformer, Mario-esque game. You had to jump him into the TV to get the orb and then come back out to give it to your characters, which I thought was really cool. It was a neat little thing, and it was not easy either. Some of the puzzles were really sort of tricky, but that's really good. It's supposed to be coming out next year. And then there was a game that I wasn't super crazy about the gameplay, but it had an element that was super, super cool. So again, Indie Mega Booth, which is where I spent most of my time. The game's called Super Slime Arena. So it's like 2D free-for-all deathmatch type thing, like with joust-style gameplay where you're jumping around and you're slimes. Everybody's a slime. The thing that's cool about this game, and it's on PC, is that if you have a controller to USB adapter for any controller, you can use that controller. So they had scattered on the floor in their booth Xbox One controllers, Xbox 360 controllers, PlayStation 2, PlayStation 1. One of the guys that worked on the team was actually using the turntable controller from DJ Hero. They had the little bongo drums from some Donkey Kong game. They had the...
That would be like Donkey Kong Jungle Beat.
Okay, just thank you.
Point of
you
order.
You could use those to play this game. It was insane. Like, you know, and it would, you know, when you start in, it would sort of recognize what your controller was and then sort of give you... Obviously, they had different control schemes for the different controllers because obviously you're not pressing buttons on those bongo drums. But anyhow, so it was really, really neat. And I asked the guy, I'm like, well, how many controllers does this support? And he was like, as many as you can plug in. So you're talking about crazy multiplayer. When I was standing there watching, One of the demos was up to 12 people locally. So it's insane. So crazy party game, you know, and you don't have to buy a bunch of controllers because if you have some controllers laying around, you just buy an adapter and then you can use that. It's because you can get an adapter for like, you know, from like GameCube to USB and that you can plug in like 3 or 4 GameCube controllers into that adapter. So I always thought that was really cool. If you had a bunch of controllers, you know, laying around, you can play this game, which is awesome. And then another game that I played was called The First Tree. And you play as a fox in that one who is separated from his mother and they're trying to find each other. Not like a baby fox, more like a teenager fox. So it's not quite as sad and heart-wrenching as you might think. But it's basically like a journey-esque type game. It's really more of exploring and enjoying the beautiful environments than it is actually like getting to these objectives. But you'll find these things in the ground, you dig them up, and then you'll get some VO about the fox and something that was going on, previously in their life and what it meant and all this kind of stuff. It was really pretty. It was really cool. I liked it a lot. Anna loved it because she could just run around and, you know, she didn't have to jump anything or, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so, let's see. Okay. Then I moved up to the PAX 10 because, you know, those are supposed to be the best games ever. There were a bunch of them that were good there. So there's a game called Wander Song, which is a 2D. It almost has like a sort of paper, like flat paper-esque art style to it. But it's basically an adventure game, but the puzzles are that you have to sing sing songs back to people, which is done by, like, a wheel will pop up and you have to point your stick or hit the buttons to hit the right notes. The dialogue in it was really, really funny. It was very cute. Again, coming out next year. And then I played a really, really neat, simple puzzle game called Tiny Bubbles, which is really just like matching up colors and to make bubbles pop and, you know, like super zen thing that you could play. Again, coming out next year. There's a game that that is out now that I just downloaded and wasn't able to play last night, which was frustrating because Isaac signed in. We share a Steam account. So Isaac has been playing Final Fantasy X-2 Remastered with Anna, and it's on the PC because that's what it was released on. And so sharing a Steam account means that you can't log in at two different places to play games.
At the same time,
at the same time. So I was not able to play, which made me kind of irritated. But anyhow, West of Loathing, again, hilarious adventure slash RPG game. The whole art is stick figures and very simple drawings, and it has a wonderful sense of humor. I was laughing like a lot when I was playing it, playing the demo of it. So I have it downloaded now so that I want to start playing it, but I think Isaac logged out. Like, I gave him a hard time. I'm like, can you just remember to log out of the account when you're done? You don't need Final Fantasy running in the background when you're at work. But anyhow, so, and then there was a game called Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, which was really neat. It's a sort of an adventure story-driven thing again. But the goal is that you're collecting stories. So, like, you'll have a little interaction with people, and then that interaction will turn into a story. And then you go to these campfires, and you share your stories with other people, and they will share stories with you. And so you're trying to collect enough stories to sort of tell the overarching story of life or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really, really neat. Cool. Yeah, very original.
I think that was actually at E3. I think I walked past that.
Oh, they had an awesome booth. Indie. They had an awesome booth because, like, they had the, like, huge, like, almost like a farm setting with, like, hay bales that you could sit on. And they had some fruit in little things. Like, most of it was fake fruit, but some of it was real. And so Anna made the game. And it was like, she made the game of Find the Real Fruit. Like, that was her game. Trying to find the real fruit. And they let her
own game.
They let her take some, too, which was fun.
Yeah.
And then lastly, oh, my God, Cosmos Quick Stop, which was part of the PAX 10.
Yes.
Cosmos
this is what I wanted
Quick
to hear you talk about.
Is a 3D game where you play as a little alien who is running a gas station in space. And it's a time management game in the vein of Diner Dash or Cooking Dash or all those things. I almost walked past this game because when I looked at it very quickly, it was like, oh, it's another one of those 3D adventure-y type things with a cute little alien dude, you know, whatever. But Anna's like, I want to play it. So I stopped, and then the developer came to Isaac and started talking to him. And he's like, you know, how much do you know about the game, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, it's kind of a 3D, like, Diner Dash-esque thing. And I'm like, what? You know, what? It was exactly, I had that exact Aria expression.
What?
Like, serious? That's why I used that gif.
Yeah.
It was exactly like that. And then I got to play it, and it's like, it is like Diner Dash, but the difficulty of it is like times three. So you've got this station that you have to walk around. The spaceships dock at these different stations that are color-coded and number-coded. And so once they get there, there's a number of things that you would have to do. Like, sometimes they need more gas. Sometimes they need more oxygen. Sometimes they want to have their spaceship cleaned. And then while they're docked, they can also come into the station. And maybe they want to buy something from the vending machine or use the bathroom or all those other things. So you're trying to do all this stuff at the stations for where the spaceships are docked. But then at the same time, you have to keep your vending machine stocked. You have to keep your gift shop stocked. You have to make sure that the bathrooms are clean. And then every once in a while, you'll get in the path of a meteor and you have to go to the center of the gas station and do a little button press mini game to stop a meteor from crashing into your station. Because if it does, you lose all your customers at the time and they don't pay.
Right.
It was insane. I was like, I love this. And they had a thing, they had taken it down by the time I went back on Monday, but this thing was like, if you can score $600 or more, then they will give you something. And so when I was playing it, I wasn't paying that much attention to that, but I got up to like 550 on my first playthrough. And then like I was itching to play it some more. Like when I got home, I'm like, man, I'm just doing 600. And then I'm like, oh, I didn't get enough combos. Because after you're done with everything that that needs to happen for a ship, you have to release the ship from the dock. And you can get combos by kind of, you know, dragging up the releasing of the ships, and then you do them one after the other and you get a combo. And so I was like, that's why I didn't get that score. I needed to do more combos. But anyhow, this game is awesome. If you like Diner Dash type time management type games, you will love it. It doesn't come out till next year. Damn it. I would love for it to be out now. So those are the games that I saw. I mean, granted, you have to remember that this was sort of my sensibilities when it comes to games. So if I saw something that that I thought Steven would like, then I didn't look at it. Are you paying attention? I just want to make sure you're paying attention.
Oh, I was paying attention. I heard what you said. That's noted.
I heard what you said.
But like, if I saw some like a 2D like platformery type thing, I was kind of like, you know, looks the same as everything else. So, so that was PAX West. It was fun. I didn't run into Greg Miller, which has not happened at all ever at any PAX. I always run into him at least once, and sometimes literally run into him at times. So I didn't see him, which was kind of sad, kind of not kind of funny, kind of sad. So that's stuff from PAX West. People listening, if you went to PAX West, let me know what you thought. If you had some games that you like, you can send an email to gamingwiththemoms@gmail.com or tweet at gamingwithmoms. So that's the news, at least that I have. Steven, was there any other news that you wanted to talk about that we didn't cover?
So hold on. I do have something, but it's super fast. So let me just get it out. I'm sorry, I was droning off. I wasn't listening to you.
That's all right.
You know, I have to give you crap.
I know, I have to give you crap too.
Yeah, it's part of the deal.
I said I didn't look at any games. I thought you were like,
well, which means you didn't look at good games. So that's up to you.
Right.
So, the one thing that is worth mentioning, and this is important, I think. Chucklefish, the company that is responsible for publishing Stardew Valley, has teased an upcoming title that they are publishing that is essentially Stardew Valley set at Hogwarts.
What?
So basically what they're saying is that they're taking some of the lessons that they have learned in Stardew Valley and applying them to a wizarding school simulator game. So now they don't have the Harry Potter license.
About this.
They don't have the Harry Potter license. Yeah. But see, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I think that actually makes it better because at this point, Harry Potter may as well be Avengers and Lord of the Rings and Batman. Like, it's you can't mess with it.
It is.
It's not even about saturation. I think it's about, like, you're locked, right? Like, you can't mess around too much. Whereas now, like, a wizarding school, like, sure, there's going to be houses and I'm sure there's going to be classes and there's going to be, like, clever little nods, but they can just do whatever they want and they're not restricted.
I want to know what the potions class is going to be like.
Sure. It's going to be, here's what it's going to be like. It's going to be great. We're all going to lose a lot of time because that game is coming out. So there is that. So other things.
Did they give a date?
No. Chucklefish doesn't give dates. Because it is the first podcast of the month of September, to give information about the Games with Gold and the PlayStation Plus lineup, September 2017 Games with Gold is as follows. Xbox One, Trials Fusion, which started August 16th, but goes through through September 15th. Forza Motorsports 5, the Game of the Year edition, is from September 1st to the 30th. And Oxenfree from September 16th to October 15th. That's one of them story-driven adventure games for one Nicole Tanner.
We covered that a lot at Pixel Kid. It was one that I always wanted to play, but I didn't now I don't have to.
Guess what? On the 16th, it's free because you have Xbox Games with Gold. Also for Xbox 360, which, by the way, are also backwards compatible on the Xbox One, Hydro Thunder Hurricane and Battlefield 3. Not a terrible lineup. The Forza, if you were like, hey, I'd like to play that, but never bought it, that's a huge value. The Game of the Year edition has a lot of stuff in it.
Yeah.
PlayStation Plus lineup, here we go. For PlayStation 4, Had a Full Boyfriend, Infamous Second Son, Riggs, which is a PlayStation VR game, Strike Vector X, We Are Doomed, and that is it.
Infamous Second Son.
Infamous Second Son is a big deal. That's like the AAA. Had a Full Boyfriend, in case you are wondering, that is a dating simulator where you date pigeons. I'm like literally not even joking. That's legit what it is. It's a dating simulator. You date pigeons. With that said, and I'm not going to give spoilers, that game takes a turn. And one Julian Murdoch of Gamers with Jobs, he actually wrote about it for PC Magazine. And it was on a dare, and he ended up writing about it. So it is actually good. I'm actually excited. I'm going to buy this game, and I'm going to play it. Or I'm going to download it for free, and I'm going to play it because I want to date some pigeons. I don't know. Whatever. But this is noteworthy because this is the first month that they have included a PlayStation VR game in PlayStation Plus. For PS3, Handball 16, and Truck Racer, and for Vita, Had a Full Boyfriend, and We Are Doomed. PlayStation Plus is from the first Tuesday of the month until the end of the month. And the Xbox Games with Gold, those are all based on those dates. Basically, Xbox, they try and mix it up a little bit. It's not every month. PlayStation, it's like clockwork. So, decent lineups. I mean, if you missed Infamous Second Son, especially if you're from the Seattle area, may as well play because apparently your house is there.
In Second Son?
Yeah. Infamous Second Son was set in Seattle.
Oh, I must be thinking of the wrong one.
You definitely are.
Infamous 2. Infamous 2 was in
New Orleans. Yeah. Now, Infamous Second Son, 100% set in Seattle, because you can jump off the Space Needle and ground punch dudes. Spoilers, jumping off the Space Needle would probably kill you.
I don't have PS Plus, though, so.
Well, then, you don't get Infamous Second Son for free. You get Oxenfree instead. And Forza, because I know you're totes a Forza fan.
Right. Yeah.
So that's all the news that I've got.
Okay.
Take it away.
Let's move into what we're playing. Obviously, I just read you a long list of what I played over the weekend. Hopefully, going to be able to start West of Loathing today. Isaac made a point of logging out last night, coming over and loading up the game on my computer so that I could see it when
so
I went
knew.
To bed. Yeah. Actually, I shouldn't give him a hard time. He was probably just making sure that it was working. But it was sitting, like, open on my computer when I went to bed. And then, obviously, Hearthstone and Cooking Dash. Hearthstone, there's a few cards that are getting a nerf. Classic cards that are getting a nerf. You can find out about that on Blizzard. I don't remember all of them. The only one that pops to my mind is Hex, which is the shaman card, is going to cost one more than it has in the past.
Is that where you turn it into a frog with zero, two?
Yeah. So that's the frog one. So
I think it costs three right now.
So. Yeah, I think it's going to cost three. Four. And then there are a couple other classic ones, too, that are either their effect is being dropped or their mana cost is going up. So you can check that out. Probably any news thing related to Hearthstone, you can find out what they are. They seem like decent nerfs to
changes.
Me.
Changes.
Yeah. So that's that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, I've been playing Cooking Dash some more too, especially after I played that Cosmos Quick Stop. I had to get my fix on something. So that's me. So, Regina, have you been playing anything?
I have to tell you this Hearthstone story.
Okay.
Because you're going to love this, I think. Okay, so remember how I told you that I accidentally got 6 new packs
right.
of the new expansions and that there was one legendary card in there?
Uh-huh.
And that I hadn't looked at it, hadn't paid any attention. Well, I messaged my friend Ryan the other day because I had a quiz or a quest that said, you know, challenge another friend.
Right.
Right, and it's 80 coins or whatever. So I'm like, dude, get on and play with me, okay? And he's like, sure. So we hopped in, and then we played, and then we did the Tavern Brawl, which was that spells cost health instead of mana.
Right.
So we built decks for that, and he beat me with the first, and then I went in and edited my deck and decided I was playing Mage. I decided to throw in this legendary card because it was a Mage card that I'd never played before, mm-hmm. and it was the Frost Lich Jaina card.
Oh, oh yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I was very excited to play this because the first time I had read it and seen what it does, and the first time I had seen, I don't know, is that new for this expansion where you can change your hero?
Well, before there were certain classes that had it. So Warlock, okay. you could play change into Lord Jaxxus. But with the expansion, every single class has one of those.
Right, because so, when I, well, yeah. I won't get ahead of myself when I'll tell this in order. So I threw it in the deck, and because I was trying to win the Tavern Brawl for myself. Now, Ryan was playing a card, and you'll forgive me, because like I don't know the names of the characters in Game of Thrones, I have no idea what the vast majority of card names are in Hearthstone. I'm still learning. But Ryan tends to play a priest. And he had a card that at the end of every turn, he got like a butler, a 1/1 butler character.
Right. Yeah.
Now, I know that I have this 9-point Jaina Frost Lich card in my deck. I only have one, of course. And I'm waiting the whole friggin' game for it to show up.
Yeah.
And we're literally sitting there and he has 6 cards and I have 5 left in my deck. And I'm like, you know that feeling when you're waiting for that one card to show up?
Yeah.
And he's like, you only have 5 cards left in your deck. And I'm like, I know, that's why I've been feeling it for 25 cards now. Like, come on. And of course it popped right up and I said, no. So he's been the whole game. He's had this character who was stealthed. I couldn't attack
right,
him.
Right, yeah.
Who would automatically create the butler with the 1/1, right?
Yeah.
Now, the Frost Mage, the Frost Lich Mage power, gives you a 3/6, what is it called? Lifesteal?
Yeah.
Elemental. Turns all your elementals into lifesteal characters. And gives you the bonus if you use your hero power to kill a minion that has one power, you automatically get another
elemental.
3/6 yeah. minion. Now, I have been waiting this whole game, watching this 1/1 pop up over and over and over again. And I have not had this character to play. Like, this card has not come up. So it finally comes up. Now, mind you, at this point in the game, Ryan is at, like, 18 health, and I was at, like, 8, I think. So it was very much looked like it was going to go in his direction.
Yeah.
And I just wiped up the floor with him. And it was just such a beautiful thing. And he's sitting there and he's like, how was I supposed to counter that? Like, what was I supposed to do? And I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah, I said, I know.
I've
you know,
come across that with some of them. Like,
yeah.
I just don't know how to, I mean, someone's figured it out, or if they haven't figured it out yet, they will.
Maybe they will,
ask,
yeah.
Ask Steve Lubitz. He probably knows how to count.
Yeah, them. Well, that was the thing. And then I played again last night, and I played against a priest, uh-huh. and they had the priest card, I don't know what the name was, that did the same thing. But what he had done before it was he had a priest card that turned his hero power into costing 0 mana.
Right.
And the Dark Priest's thing is do 2 damage. And anytime you play a card, you
refreshes.
Can do it again.
Yes,
he had turned yeah, he had turned his hero power to cost 0.
Mm.
So every time he played, it didn't cost him any. Anytime he used his hero power, it didn't cost him anything. And every time he played a card, he could play it again. Oh my God. Yeah. I was just like, what am I supposed to do with this? Like, I just have to watch myself melt and burn. So I sent Ryan a screenshot and I'm like, this is what you need. Right. Exactly. You want to know how to fight Jaina? This is what you need.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
So I had a delightful time with both of those, even losing to the other one. I don't care if win or lose, but
yeah,
I had a really fun time playing that and just wiping the floor with Ryan because he was just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this.
Yeah. Yeah, that new sort of element, I think, has really
it's
really
interesting.
Interesting, yeah. Really changes the dynamic. All right, so Steven, what have you been playing?
I have really only... I mean, I played a bunch of stuff over the weekend, but the two biggest games I have been playing are Everybody's Golf for the PlayStation 4, which is really, really good. It's $40, and it's better than you think it is, because... You know,
it's better than you think it is.
No, I mean, come on. You think about golf games, you're like, right? Like, but it's it's fun. It's adorable. It's very accessible. My kids were playing it. So I think it's going to be a big hit over the holiday. I will have a review soonish. But the big hit around this house has been Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, which is literally everything that I had ever dreamed that it would be. It's legit XCOM with Super Mario characters. It's it. I mean, we made the joke about it at E3 when we were looking at the videos. And let me tell you, it delivers on that promise. They said, we're going to give you XCOM where you play as Mario and a bunch of Rabbids, and there's going to be fart jokes and there's going to be shenanigans. And you know what? Guess what? It was all of those things. It's really fun. It is hard. There's no way around that. It is a challenging game. However, if you own a Switch, it's worth it. If you do not own a Switch but like strategy games, go buy a Switch. Do it right now because they're going to be hard to find this holiday. Just go do it because this is worth it. This is an absolute – like, you think Ubisoft is making a Rabbids game that's about strategy with Mario. You think they're going to make, like, this garbage-like thing, right? You know, like, it's right. Just, they're just going to spit out this game. No, this game was lovingly handcrafted. This was lovingly crafted. This was made by people who really love that Mario IP. It shows – there's a video on the IGN's extra – it's called Expert Mode on their Facebook Watch programming, where they interviewed the creator, and he clearly loves this game, this franchise, and really paid homage to it in some very cool ways. I never thought I'd see like Mario near like a bunch of fart jokes, but here we are. And I'm here for it. So, this is absolutely like a must play. If you had told me this was a Nintendo game and was made by Nintendo and that they just borrowed Rabbids stuff, I wouldn't have any reason to think that you were not telling me the truth. This is, and that's a compliment because Nintendo, everything's polished, everything's perfect. This is great. Also, Luigi's a sniper.
Also, that's awesome.
Because he's afraid.
Right. Oh, okay. So he hides, right.
Wow. Yeah. Nice.
That's cool.
Nice. All right. Is that it then, Steven?
Yeah, pretty much. Those were the only, I mean, I played a bunch of board games. We don't care about that this week. But it was really fun.
All right, cool. Okay. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up. Thanks so much for listening. If you have questions or comments, you can send an email to gamingwiththemoms@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at gamingwithmoms. As mentioned at the top of the show, Regina is from the Geek Embassy. And let's talk about what's going on in the Geek Embassy, Regina.
You are all going to come watch our Game of Thrones episodes. If you haven't already, there are four that we did for season 7. And in about a week, we'll have a final wrap-up where we're going to go through and look at all the theories and all the fan theories and all of our theories. And we're all rewatching the whole season again in anticipation of this wrap-up. So come and watch that. And
I have notes.
Nicole has notes. So... But what I've decided after having done that for the Geek Embassy is that we're going to pick a couple of choice shows this fall and are going to be creating content on a weekly basis based on the episodes as they air. The first one that I have everybody committed to watching is the new Star Trek Discovery. And so Stephen and Nicole, if either of you are interested, you are welcome to join us for those as well. Of course, I'm not sure when we'll be recording. It'll probably be evening, but that's going to be the first series that I know we're dedicated to.
Do you have anyone signed up for the Orville?
No.
It was a joke. Do you even know? Was that a look of disgust,
sure. Yeah.
Nicole?
No.
Do either of you know what it is?
No.
Okay, so the Orville is a dramedy send-up of Star Trek as done by Seth MacFarlane.
Oh, yes. I remember seeing
that. So he's the captain, and his first mate is his ex-wife, as played by the girl that played Mockingbird from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay. Ah, all right. Well, maybe we'll check that out too.
I don't know that you should. I think this has canceled after three episodes, just all over it.
Written all over it, yeah. The adult version of the Muppets they did a few years ago.
That was just dumb.
I know.
Anyway,
yes. So that's the plan for our fall offerings for everybody. So check it out and definitely come and see our Game of Thrones because I mean we're hilarious. We really are.
I
promise.
You know, I didn't share this story. The last time we recorded, I was, you know, my computer is sort of sits in front of our staircase. And so I know that when Isaac was out of town, Anna came out of her room and was listening to us talk because the next morning she asked me about how the dragon died. And so I'm like, oh, you were listening. And so the next time we recorded, she did the same thing, except for the fact that she fell asleep on the landing of our steps.
I love that.
So, I turned to go to bed, and I'm like, she's just snoozing there. I had to go get Isaac. I'm like, you gotta see this. I went up there, and she's just... And it was funny, I woke her up, and, you know, she was totally out of it. I'm like, you need to go, you need to go back to bed. And then the next morning, she had no memory of it whatsoever.
Yeah, that's so funny. That's so sweet, though, that she's, you know, wants to listen or whatnot. Yeah. And good that we have a PG and no swearing show.
Right, exactly. Which is hard to do with Game of Thrones.
It is, it really is.
All right, Stephen is editor and founder of EngageFamilyGaming.com, who's apparently going to be doing an unboxing and more videos of Destiny. What else you got going on, Stephen?
Really, that's pretty much it. We're kind of revisiting all of our content, et cetera, kind of making things a little tighter, to make it so I don't slowly go insane. So just keep your eyes on Engage Family Gaming. We are, making some changes to get ready for the fall. But you know, it's all good.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up. Thanks so much for listening, and we will be back with you next week.
Bye.